Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Genuinely shocking twist that I did not expect and did not see coming. Samoa Joe has been working with the devil, and as such, MJF has lost the Ring of Honor Tag Team Championships to the Putty Patrol. I am Luke Owen, DAD. I'm joined by Pete Quinnell as we review AEW Dynamite here on the Wrestle Podcast channel. Please do press the subscribe button if this is your first time here and you haven't already. Give us a little thumbs up to help with the old algorithm. Not that I know if it actually helps with the algorithm these days. I think they just keep changing their mind on what the thumbs up button does, but press it anyway. And leave a comment down below with what you thought of this episode of AEW Dynamite, as well as your thoughts on our awards, our end of war. I've actually got an update for the end of year awards that I would like to do a little bit later on. So please do try and remind me.
I would try my best.
I would like to, the thing I want to bring up.
Okay.
Well, so, you know, that's we call that in the industry a hook and tease.
Okay.
So that's a teaser for later on down the line.
Yes.
Stick around. You can find out what has happened with the end of year awards.
Ooh, sounds interesting.
Doesn't it just?
Yes.
Until then, we'll review Dynamite. Yeah. But yeah, we're going to review Dynamite now. And the main event of this show started with about 5 minutes before the top of the hour.
Yeah, they were like, with a 60-minute time limit. I'm like, oh, that's ambitious.
It was like, they're at the end of the Danielson Kingston match. Mm-hmm. And I was like, whew, hot dog, like, you know, wiping away the sweat from my brow. Mm-hmm. I was like, I need a cigarette after that match. Yeah. It was so good. And then I was like, I tapped my phone screen because I had to watch this on the train coming in this morning. Yeah. It was the optimum way of watching wrestling, I find.
Yeah.
So, you know, I tapped the screen to see how much longer was left of the show. And there was like half an hour left. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh man, that gives us loads of time for the MJF and Samoa Joe tag. I guess there won't be a women's match on this show, which, you know, it's not great, but like it gives us time for this main event thing. And then there were some more talking segments. Then a women's match started. And I was like,
How
much time are we going to give? I guess this will be more angle than it is match. And that's what it ended up being.
Yeah.
It was like only like a couple of minutes long once the entrances had happened and everything. So what happened was the Putty Patrol came out. And then what?
The Devil's Masked Men.
Yeah. The Putty Patrol. The Putty Patrol. They came out and MJF made his entrance. Mm-hmm. Aim at the full shebang and everything. Samoa Joe's music played, and no Samoa Joe.
Mm-hmm.
No Moa Joe. And then he looked on the screen.
Samoa No.
That was better.
Samoa No Show.
Samoa No Show.
We did it.
Samoa No. Anyway, on the screen, they showed. Jamoa showed him on the screen. And he was all screaming in agony because his leg was hurt. Because presumably the devil or the Putty Patrol had attacked him backstage. So he's there like screaming in agony. And MJF is just like, ah, man, annoying. But I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
Because it means the world to me that I defend these belts. I told my best friend Adam Cole that I would defend these belts all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gets in the ring. He basically out-wrestles both of them, even though they've got the numbers advantage. It slightly gets them in their favor. But MJF is never in danger. Until Another one comes out from under the ring while the referee is distracted, and he clocks MJF with a lead pipe.
In his bad shoulder.
In his bad shoulder, which he had like hugely taped up.
Yeah.
And then one of the Putty Patrol hit the Heat Seeker, MJF's own move, and pinned him with his feet on the ropes, though he did slip.
Sort of.
Yeah, kind of bollocks that up a little bit. Get his feet on the ropes to get the 1-2-3. Like a deathly silent from the crowd of like, oh. All right.
Yeah.
And they announced, well, they actually didn't even announce they're the winners. They just, like, Justin Roberts was just like, and the winners, a new Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions, but doesn't know what to call them.
Yeah, well, then there was a brawl that happened, so it just stopped announcing afterwards.
They started brawling, they started beating up MJF some more. Samoa Joe comes out with a chair. There's, like, officials trying to stop him and restrain him. Samoa Joe walks down to the ring, chair in hand. He slides into the ring, and he fends them off. The devil appears on screen and says, "Pleasure doing business with you." And I was like, oh, that's a nice little bit of, it could go either way. Mm. Was that the devil saying that to Max to beat up Samoa Joe, which would be weird, I guess.
Weird.
But it was actually directed, and it was made very clear, it was directed to Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe hits MJF with the chair, and he grabs him and he picks him up, and he says, "I've been doing this to you. Yep. I've been doing this with you." And like they were on commentary being like, he is working with the devil. There's no two ways about this. Samoa Joe is working with the devil. He's not the devil, but he's been working with him. And he gives him the muscle buster, and he stands tall. And that's a really, really good closing angle leading into the pay-per-view. Because this has been a storyline that's been a bit like, oh, he's the henchman. He's going to be, I want to make sure you're 100%. But now, like, in your final moment, your closing moment, you want to have the hottest part of this. This is now MJF going up against a devil goon. But it's a goon that we know, and it's a fully heel Samoa Joe, which is well dangerous. So I thought, like, clumsiness aside, and I do think there is a better way of doing this, which I'll give my fantasy pitch to in a moment. But I do think overall this was an effective angle to build to the pay-per-view.
I agree. I think it was a very effective angle to build to the pay-per-view. I do think it was misplaced. I think this would have been way more effective last week. This would have been big reveal. Joe's been working with the devil. Oh my God. What does this mean? Has it been the whole time? Was it just this one? Has Joe been corrupted? What's his relationship with the devil? I feel like there's a lot of questions still. And then if you just had one more week to kind of tie a bow on all of this, and that's when you have Max getting fired up, Joe getting fired up, they have a brawl on the go-home show.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the big heat to then go into the pay-per-view. It just feels like this is a really important step in the story, and a very important one, and a good one, and this was a good story. It just feels like it needs to come slightly earlier, because I feel like there's still questions heading into World's End, when I don't think we should be having those questions. Not those questions. Some other ones, absolutely. We need intrigue for the match. But this still, to me, felt a little bit like, oh, I need a bit more from this now. Now that we've had this next step, I need it to be answered before they have the match.
I think that's fair. Because I think a lot of sort of common thoughts on this and sort of like, you know, pretty much, I don't want to say like a commonplace thought process on it, but we talked about this last week on the Dynamite show. Some people are starting to get a little bit, all right, like, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
When are we going to get to the fireworks factory? And the fireworks factory appears to be World's End.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, that was a couple of weeks away. So it's like, okay, we'll do it. And then we'll do this. And then we'll do this. Mm-hmm. I thought, like, the Hangman stuff, I thought was a really nice wrinkle to it. I think the addition of Swerve last week was a really nice, like, addition to it.
Agreed.
But I think you're right, because we were supposed to have this match 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I lose track of time.
I think it was
Christmas. I don't know anymore.
I think it was 3 weeks ago when they first announced they were going to do Joe and MJF versus the Masked Men, and they didn't do it because they did an angle instead where they attacked MJF backstage. So I kind of get that way, but I think you're right, and I do agree with you that this has been like a little bit like teasing out slightly too much, and that maybe we could have done this maybe then and just really like sort of heat this up so we're going like really hot going into the pay-per-view, as opposed to being the go-home angle, having the really most heated part of this feud going into the pay-per-view. So I get it to a point. I can see both sides of it. For me, though, where I kind of stand on the clumsy execution of it is, here is how I would have booked this. If I may.
Yes, please.
You have the match. So it's Joe and it's MJF against the Putty Patrol. And MJF and Joe are both standing in the ring. Joe walks in front of Max to protect him. And then he turns around and he clocks MJF, gives him the muscle buster, tells one of the guys to pin him. Guy pins him. He wins the tag titles. And that's when you have the devil appear on screen. Pleasure doing business with you. Joe lays him out some more. The reason why I think my version works slightly better, if I may be so bold as to brag about this and say, Joe is the one that's caused him the loss.
Yep.
Because my big like negative I have on this, I don't want to see my world champion being pinned going into the pay-per-view, particularly by chumps. Particularly by masked chumps who I've got no idea are. Like, I call them the Putty Patrol because they just feel like goons. They may be wearing t-shirts like Batman villains in, in the 60s show. It's a goon on them. So I think in my version, with Joe being the one that takes out Max, that means that Joe has cost him something to give you that real big bit of heat going into the pay-per-view. You still get the reveal, but it's Joe's the driving force. See what I mean? Like that's, that's, if I was to do it, that's probably what I would have pitched.
Yeah, because in this, in your version, the emphasis is much more on Joe.
Yeah.
Because it is still Joe that cost him because he didn't come out for the tag match. But really, it's just the masked men that did it. The focus is on the masked men.
It was the lad under the ring.
Yes,
that
exactly.
really cost MJF the
Absolutely,
match.
Absolutely, yes. Whereas this felt, I think it was like, I think yours is actually better, For me as well, though, what I didn't particularly like about the way that MJF lost was, for me, it was a bit too quick based on the template that they've already made. MJF overcomes all the odds. That's literally what he does in every match. He's had one leg against Jay White and he wins. He's done ridiculous stuff where some people have gone, that's a bit much. And he's actually overcome ridiculous odds. But you've now set that template. So when it is one pipe shot and a heat seeker, that's not really enough to pin him.
Yeah, I guess so, because it's you. I make the argument of as to the injured shoulder.
Yeah,
and it's MJF's own move, so you're protecting that move.
Yeah,
but yeah,
but it's
I
a
agree.
Signature for him. It's not. It's not even like his main thing. Like if it was the diamond ring, I could get that.
Yeah, totally.
But if it was like, yeah, it just felt like a little bit like, oh, well, he's overcome all this other stuff. Why didn't he kick out this at the start of a match as well?
And you can,
2 minutes in.
And like, I think you can tell by the flat crowd's reaction to it.
Everyone was like, oh, that's how it's going to end.
Yeah.
All right.
It wasn't stunned silence, I don't
no,
think.
No, it wasn't. It was a bit of just like shock, but not like good shock. It was
This is not the streak ending.
No.
Like, and I'm not trying to say that the two would have been like comparable.
No.
But like that was that stunned silence of people being like, wait, was that the finish? This was more like, wait, was that the finish?
Wait, that was the finish? Yeah.
So, yeah, so I think this, in theory, this was good.
Yes.
I don't think the execution of it was particularly great.
Agreed,
On multiple levels. Not only the bits you and I brought up there, but what you brought up a moment ago, which is, maybe done this last week. Like if you'd have just shifted a lot of things forward, so you'd have done like the MJF swerve confrontation 2 weeks ago, the Hangman thing the week before that.
Yep.
So we can still do all of that great stuff, but you've already got like, you know a person in this group.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And sort of like give some answers there. Joe can cut a promo about this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I take your point on that.
And I think as well, again, something that would have been nice if we had a little bit extra time for it, either in the segment this time or if we did it like a week earlier or something, is what was Joe's goal here? Was it to cost Max the tag titles or was it to beat Max up so that he's not 100% for the pay-per-view? Because before he was like, well, I'm going to protect you. I want you to be 100% of the pay-per-view because I don't want there to be any excuses, blah, blah, blah. That was his reasoning before. But now this time he beat up Max before the thing and his turn came not by costing him the tag titles, like it is in your one, but afterwards because he wanted to beat Max up.
Yeah.
If he's going to beat Max up, beat him up more.
Yeah.
He did one muscle buster, and it was like, oh, my great plan. You know, it was like, you know that Paul Heyman storyline where it's like, oh, I'm going to turn on Brock Lesnar, and I'm going to side with Roman Reigns, and it's all so I can spray some mace in his face. And it was like, don't you have more than that? Like, for me, like, Joe's goal here should be to incapacitate Max. It should be, like, to rule him out almost from competing kind of thing. And it felt like the turn, while cool and being like, oh, Joe's worked with the devil, his payoff should have been, like, I'm going to injure Max so he can barely compete because he knows that Max will compete anyway, even if he shouldn't.
Yeah.
Max is going to put it all on the line anyway because that's what he does. So I feel like it should have been a bit more than just, like, here's a chair shot, here's a muscle buster. That's it.
I would agree with that. I suppose the question that we now have is, how long has Joe been in cahoots with the devil?
And this is why I wanted more time. We don't know things about this.
I guess in a way, like, you could argue there's a bit of intrigue and tease about that, but
for me, that's not intrigue about the match, though.
That's right. It's intrigue about the story itself. Exactly. Like, you can have your cake and eat it in your world, which is you do this the week previous, and you say you still have the intrigue of why he did, but then you get your answers to that and still the heat going into the pay-per-view.
And the answers inform the match. The answers build heat for the match. Yeah. Like, that would be my way to build to this more.
To give it, like, the one huge bit of positivity I will put on this, though, is we don't have the ROH tag titles on MJF anymore.
That is a good thing.
Which I do think, since Adam Cole went out injured, has been weighing him down.
It was such a good idea when Adam Cole was around. Stroke of genius.
Bingo. That's exactly it. All In Weekend, when they won the tag belt,
perfect.
It was the perfect thing to do. It was the right thing to be doing for the storyline at that point. The second that Cole got injured, it has just been this crutch around this story, because it's just meant that, oh, he's defending it on pay-per-view, but in 2-on-1 handicap matches, or he's defending on pay-per-view with a surprise partner. Mm-hmm. And it really has been holding him back, I feel.
Yeah.
And it's actually been holding ROH back as well, because, you know, Final Battle wasn't defending the tag titles on there, which means that Ring of Honor just hasn't had the tag belts now since the summer. Mm-hmm. Like, it hasn't been on TV since the summer. They've just been elsewhere in AEW's verse.
Yeah.
So I think it's good that he doesn't have those tag belts anymore.
Plus, Big agree.
It gives him some nice heat and, you know, character motivations, which would have been nice in a promo if you were in your world.
Yeah.
But it gives him nice character motivations of being like, you took away the thing I've been trying to defend for my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think there's some nice things around there.
Yes. It's not a complete terrible segment.
No.
There's definitely some positives to be taken out of this. It's just, it feels like the execution, it could have been great.
Yes.
And it was fine.
Yeah.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
What do you think about it? Let us know in the comments down below. We're doing a pre-recorded show today, so we don't have any Ultra Chats to go through. But thank you all so much for watching all of our content. Over. Shall I go through some of the end of year award stuff now?
Yes.
Shall I do this now?
Let's do it now.
I'll do it now while I'm remembering it.
Okay.
So we had a cutoff date for the end of year results, which was December the something. I can't remember what it was, but it was December the something we had. Four people submitted late.
Ugh.
And it was either like after we'd recorded the episodes,
mm-hmm.
or it was like a couple of days after we recorded the episodes, but some people got their submissions in late.
Sure.
And that is like, oh, that's disappointing because their voices can't be heard within the pantheon of other great names.
Yeah.
But I was bored on the train, Pete. So I thought, how does this affect our current top 10 as it is?
I mean, it doesn't because they submitted late. Just want to clarify that.
Absolutely, yeah. It doesn't. And I should say, for best wrestler, the top four remains the same.
Cool.
So Ospreay won, MJF came second, Gunther came third, and Danielson came fourth.
Yeah.
Like, that is unchanged.
Yeah.
The biggest change, I would say, is that Jey Uso and Roman Reigns fell out of the top 10, fell to 11th and 12th, respectively. Jey Uso was actually tied with Orange Cassidy for points, but Orange Cassidy got more nominations than him. LA Knight jumped up into the top 10 because he got a top-level nomination within the four that submitted later. He came in ninth, and Rhea Ripley jumped up to fifth.
Wow.
Through four nominations, jumped up to fifth. That is how close she was in that top 15 to breaking through into the top 10. That four nominations came in and she jumped up right into... and I think she did get a top level in that as well.
Rad.
So leapfrogged Cody Rhodes and Swerve Strickland and LA Knight and Sami Zayn and Orange Cassidy.
Crazy.
Which, you know, we were talking about this on the best wrestler of the year. We're like, it kind of sucks that we've had no women in our top 10. But these four late submissions, if you'd have got them in on time, would have pushed her in. Same story with the best match. It was still Kenny Omega versus Will Ospreay. It was still Hangman versus Swerve in second. It was still MJF Danielson in third, and Gunther versus Chambers versus Drew in fourth, and Danielson versus Sabre Jr. in fifth. In fact, I don't think much changed. Oh, the only thing that did change is the Men's Royal Rumble jumped up to 10th place.
Oh, cool.
Knocking off Bryan Danielson versus Ricky Starks.
Oh, okay. Right.
Best pay-per-view... WrestleDream got into the fifth position, I think. That didn't make it into the top five last time. But WrestleDream got into the top five, but everything else remained the same. Don't think there was any big changes in the worst match. Yeah, just looking at that now.
Yeah,
no, Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes still remained in the top 10. Roman versus Jey still in the top 10.
Yeah.
There was more of a points distinction between Adam... Because you remember Adam Cole versus Jericho, Shane versus The Miz. Oh, no, it was Adam Cole versus Jericho, Austin... There was three matches that all got the same score, right?
Yeah.
In fact, I've got it right here. I can tell you which one it was. Adam Cole versus Jericho, Jeff Jarrett versus Jeff Hardy, and Austin Theory versus John Cena all got the same points.
Yeah.
That did get separated out, so the... Third was Jarrett versus Hardy.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth was Shane versus Miz, which jumped up a few places. Then it was Cole versus Jericho, which tied with Theory versus Cena.
Okay.
But Theory versus Cena did get technically come fifth because I got three top-level nominations.
Yep.
And worst pay-per-views was more or less the same.
Yeah.
But All Out still remained. I really thought Double or Nothing.
So crazy.
I think it's mad that All Out was in the top five.
That is insane.
I think it's genuinely... insane. Yeah. And it was only by one point it being Double or Nothing, but I think that is madness. Because I thought Double or Nothing was such a worse show.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Amazing. I thought when, you know, going through the comments of like people's thoughts on the awards, I saw so many shouts for the Four Pillars Four Way from Double or Nothing. Amazed that didn't make it into the top 10.
Yeah.
But looking at it, I don't think it got a single nomination.
Wow.
Just double checking. Yeah.
That's crazy.
It didn't get a single nomination across the sort of, even with the extras that came in late, between like the sort of 40 odd nominations we got. Not a single norm.
Wow. That is insane, because that is a great match.
It's so good.
Just shows the caliber of wrestling for 2023.
Yeah.
That is insane.
But anyway, I was born on the train, so I thought I'd do a little bit. So there you go. There's a slight bit of update for you there on but the official standings are the ones that are in the videos.
Oh, yeah.
That's a little fun addendum. The Elseworlds standings.
Alternate timeline.
Yeah. If Kate from Fightful had got her submissions in on time.
I was going to say name and shame.
I don't know if it was Kate from Fightful.
You just call her out and you don't even know it was her?
I think she was one of them. Tegan was definitely one of them.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, Tegan was for sure one of them. Because that was the first one I saw was Tegan. I was like, oh, Teagues. Come on, mate. You had so long to do this. And I know she's been thinking about this for a while because she messaged me the second I sent it to her being like, I'm going to put a lot of thought in this. Yeah. I'd argue you put too much thought in it, Tegan.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get into the rest of New Year's Smash, and we kick things off with Gold League semi-finals. John Moxley versus Swerve Strickland versus Jay White.
Hot dog, this was good.
This match ruled.
Oh, this was so, so great.
Yeah.
I've loved the Gold League.
Mm-hmm.
I've loved Moxley in it. I've loved Swerve in it. I've loved Jay White in it. I have loved the Gold League. Mm-hmm. I think the Gold League is... People haven't loved it as much. I think it's had both Briscoe and Jay White mm-hmm. in there, both on 0 points.
Mm-hmm.
But I've loved the Gold
League. Lethal?
What did I say?
Jay White.
Yeah, sorry, Lethal. Again, Vince was right. Like, having people with the same name just it adds confusion.
Uso, yeah. It's all the same.
It's all the same. Jay Lethal and Mark Briscoe, thank you for correcting me.
Yeah.
I think having both of them on 0 points has sort of made people have been a bit down on it. It's a bit more of the predictable league.
Mm.
I think ending up with a triple threat shows that this has been fairly unpredictable as, mm-hmm. as a Gold League. So I don't think anyone saw a triple threat coming out of this. All of them on 12 points.
Yeah.
And I've loved this match so, so much. It went like nearly 25 minutes. So it took up the first like half hour of the show with entrances. It was awesome.
This is so fun. I love that this is a rare triple threat in AEW. I love that triple threats are rare. I don't know why. It just makes it feel more important. I wrote a couple times in my notes and mentally just went, Swerve's the man.
Yeah.
In this match. He's so cool.
He's so good.
I mean, because I did the news video this morning, and as part of that, when I'm gathering news stories, I do tend to see some of the results from some of the shows that have happened the previous night. I had seen the result of this match. It did not take away from my enjoyment, because some of the near falls, I'm still like, well, that's it. Even though I know it can't be it.
There was a Swerve near fall in mm-hmm. this, when he was pinning, he had like a jackknife on Jay White or something, and Jay White kicked out like 2.999.
Oh my God, yeah.
To the point where the crowd thought they'd bollocked it.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't. It was like a completely mm-hmm. clean kick out.
Yep.
But it was so close to that three that the crowd mm-hmm. went like, oh!
Yeah.
Oh! And this crowd, this Orlando crowd, I thought were mm-hmm. great throughout the night.
They were.
They were so hot for Swerve Strickland.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they wanted to see Swerve win this.
Yeah.
Because, like, he's become, as you were saying,
he's the man.
He's the man. He's
yeah.
the guy yeah. of AEW right now. So, like, yeah, people were really, like almost like frothing at the mouth mm-hmm. to see Swerve win. I think they'd have been very happy seeing Moxley win as well, yeah. which they were when he did. I mean, I went into this when they first announced the standings and the tables for this. I said to Tempest on the train, I was like, well, this has got Moxley versus Kingston as the finals, like, all over.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of had it in the back of my head, that's probably the direction that we're heading. That it did not like stop me, because I was like, Swerve's on such a roll.
Mm-hmm.
Jay White, I felt, was probably the lesser of the three options in terms of like going into the finals.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't discredit him from the work that he's done in his, because I also thought he does need a big bit of rehabilitation mm-hmm. after full gear. So
right.
giving him the win, I think him getting to the finals does a huge amount for him. But Mox wins here. He gives Jay White the Death Rider, so he gets the revenge for the attack last week with the mm-hmm. chair and the avenging the loss last week as well. And Swerve Strickland was just too late
mm-hmm.
to break up that pin. A great match.
This made everyone look great.
Yeah.
And as has the C2 as a whole, this is why tournaments are the best thing in wrestling. They are so good for this reason in particular, because you get stories that you wouldn't have anywhere else in wrestling. I love this. And I love that at so many different points, everybody looked like they were winning. And like convincing near falls, not just like they had an opportunity to win. They had a near fall. Everyone went, oh,
yeah.
That's it. And then you get the Mox win at the end. It was perfect. And then I'm really glad they put this match on first, because then you get it's Moxley versus either Bryan Danielson or Eddie Kingston. And it goes, oh, that's great. Because either one of the people who win, you've got a story.
Absolutely.
Oh, it's like, perfect.
It's been such a brilliantly booked
yeah.
G1 round robin tournament.
Mm-hmm.
I full credit to them.
Yeah.
It's had its detractors, but I feel like, I mean, we were talking about this on last week's show. I feel like most of the detractors to it were detractors going into it.
Yes.
So it's not like they were never going to have their minds changed. But I think those who've been along for the ride have been spoilt with great mm-hmm. wrestling.
Yeah.
And that's the thing as well. Like, I think back to when WWE announced they were doing King of the Ring. This was mm-hmm. like 2019 or so. They were bringing back King of the Ring, whatever it was. And we had people emailing in, because the G1 was running at a similar time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's going to be WWE's G1.
No, it's not.
And I was like, I wouldn't get too excited mm-hmm. because WWE, A, hate King of the Ring.
Yeah.
and it's obviously in the Vince era, hate King of the Ring, and B, don't particularly love doing tournaments, mm-hmm. and C, it's not really a wrestling company.
Yeah.
I think if they did a King of the Ring now, it'd be a very different story, because agreed. I think Triple H would want to do a more wrestling-centric and wrestling-focused King of the Ring.
Yeah.
But this is kind of what people wanted out of AEW from the get-go, mm-hmm. was this is wrestling for wrestling fans who mm-hmm. like wrestling.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, Tony Khan had the thing, was like, if you keep telling me you want to see good wrestling on AEW, like, put your money where your mouth is and watch the C2. Mm-hmm. And I've watched this, and like, here's some money, I'm putting it in my mouth, because I loved this.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed this tournament so, so much. And this was a show that only had four matches on it, mm-hmm. and the other two matches both went under 10 minutes. One of them went like 9 minutes something, which was the women's match. And then the MJF one, as we said, was more angle than it was match. But these two C2 finals, semifinals, 25 minutes they were given basically in ring. Amazing. I can't wait for the final.
So much fun.
I loved this triple threat.
So much fun. Loved this match.
And then if I wasn't excited enough, because mm-hmm. you're right, like John Moxley, I'm like, oh, it's either Danielson or it's mm-hmm. Kingston.
Yeah.
It's either the underdog of it being Kingston, or Brian proves that he's a bum, mm-hmm. and it's going to be Danielson, and it's BCC versus mm-hmm. BCC.
Yep.
And then they played a video package for Danielson versus Kingston, and I was like, oh, I can't wait.
Yeah.
I cannot wait to see this match.
Mm-hmm.
And it more than delivered. We'll get to that in a bit. But because we spent half an hour doing the wrestling,
mm-hmm.
we then spent the next half an hour of the mm-hmm. show doing talking segments.
Yeah.
Did six of them back to back.
It was quite a lot.
Some backstage, some two of which were like on screen, ad breaks in between. We started off with Swerve Strickland being interviewed backstage by Tony Schiavone, and that set up a match with Keith Lee for Saturday in an odd segment.
Yeah. I feel like it would have benefited from Keith Lee being there.
I don't know this for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm under the impression, or I get the feeling, he was supposed to be there.
Mm.
You know, there have been those reports of like Keith Lee didn't show up for something because he didn't know that he was supposed to yeah. be there. There was like a miscommunication mm-hmm. in like the setup for it, and and then there was like, oh no, he wasn't supposed to be there, but he thought he was. And
yeah.
There's been all this stuff with him. Because they kept saying, is he here?
Mm-hmm.
And Tony Schiavone said, oh, he's here. But if he doesn't see you, he gave me this to give you.
Yeah.
I feel like this whole segment was set up to be Swerve and Keith Lee would have a stare down,
mm-hmm.
but Keith Lee wasn't there. So they had to do this right around of it of like, oh, no, and he is here, guys. Like, Keith Lee is here in the building, but I've got the contract. He gave it to me to give to you just in case he wasn't around when I was doing your interview.
Yeah. It was a weird segment, this one. And like, Swerve being frustrated and saying that they're like, oh, the C2 is amazing. I've proved that I'm one of the best in the world. Like, I didn't win that match, sure, but, you know, I wasn't pinned. I'm still one of the best in the world to do it. Also, Keith Lee, we should have a match. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, because it's something, because Keith Lee's been kind of calling him out, yes. like, talking about this he that he has a mm-hmm. problem with. And so he's like, oh, you got a problem with me? Well, here you go. Like, I want to get a contract to have a match with you this Saturday.
Yeah.
And then Tony Schiavone's like, well, you know, Keith Lee is here today, mm-hmm. but he gave me this contract to hand to you. And Swerve's got this contract. He's like, okay. And Prince Nana's like, whoa, a contract? I haven't been approached to approve this contract. And Tony's like, well, that is for your approval. That's what a contract's for.
That is it. And then Swerve was like, it's okay. And then they walked off.
Yeah.
It was very strange, that one.
Yeah, I don't think this worked.
No, it didn't.
But Swerve's great.
Swerve's great, and I'm glad they're doing a match. It's very, very late.
Yeah.
But I'm glad they're finally having it, I suppose.
Mariah May then had an interview on the stage with Renee Paquette, where mm-hmm. she announced that she's going to be having her first match in AEW next week on Dynamite, mm-hmm. because she feels that 2023 has been a bit icky, so she'd rather wait until 2024 to do this. This was kind of a bit of a backdrop, because Riho then came out to attack Mariah May, because Mariah May attacked her last week. And then Tony Storm ran down. Riho beat up Tony Storm for a bit, stood tall. That's your go-home angle for mm-hmm. the pay-per-view.
It was fine.
It was fine.
I think, to me, this kind of signaled that, like, yeah, we got the Riho stuff, but really, let's focus on the Mariah May stuff. That's the important bit next week.
Yeah. Mariah May's, like, her whole catchphrase is all about Mariah. It's just like, yeah, that's not only just for your character, that's also this story.
Yes. Yeah.
This has nothing to do with Riho here, though I do think they're going to have a very good match.
Mm-hmm.
Then we were backstage, and we had an interview with Top Flight and Action Andretti, where they said, look, we came up short. for the Trios titles. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that we're done with Trios action. There's still lots of great Trios teams to mm-hmm. we could face. And in walks Chaos mm-hmm. of Orange Cassidy, Rocky Romero, and Trent Beretta. And Orange Cassidy's like, oh, we get it. You know, you're laying out challenges. We're only 5 feet away.
Yeah.
So see you on Rampage.
Yeah.
And then they walk off. And then Action Andretti, they're like, you know, hey, cool, it's a match on Rampage. He gets around the match on Rampage. And Action Andretti's like, sounds good. And he gets this water bottle out of his pocket, undoes the cork, and then he just puts into, and he goes, and he crushes the bottle into his mouth. And so he drinks all the water immediately while sucking it through. And it is like instant. Like, it is. It's unreal how quickly he does it. It's genuinely impressive. But it's so weird that the commentators giggle.
And the crowd are going like, huh?
Because you've got Excalibur and Taz giggling over what just transpired. You miss his outro line, which I think was probably something like, what did he tweet?
Hydretti.
Hydretti. Stay Hydretti or something. Weirdest out, and on a show where Harley Cameron pull out a knife later on in this show. This was one of the weirder things I've seen in a backstage segment on Dynamite. But this has the potential to get over.
Oh,
massively.
This is getting over. Of course it is.
This is going to get him more over than him beating Chris Jericho.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's got the possibility of getting.
This was brilliant. I loved it.
I was so perplexed by it.
I don't get it, but I love it.
Also, terrible for the planet.
Really bad.
Get a reusable bottle, Action Andretti.
You can't crush it then. What's he going to do?
Get a new party trick. get something else to get you over. A personality might help. But like, honestly.
This is his personality.
Well, honestly, bud, that's a slam on Andretti, Andretti, which I don't mean. I'm only kidding. But like, as much as I was like, mate, we're all trying to not use single-use plastics, mate.
Yeah.
This has not got, like, recycling written all over it. Danielson's in charge of a lot of things, mate. This is really going to annoy him.
Oh, man. Brilliant segment.
Honestly.
Loved it. 10 out of 10.
I wanted to have this as the thumbnail.
Yeah. No notes for this one.
Yeah, no notes.
Absolutely brilliant.
Miro then had a video promo calling out Andrade El Idolo. They're going to have a match at World's End as well. That's just something that's been brewing in the background of the CT for the past few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got the Don Callis family segment, which was also multiple other segments.
Yeah.
This has got so much in common with, turns out AR Fox can't travel across the UK, and we've only found this out the week before All In, so mm-hmm. we need to change the All In match.
Yeah.
So we need to do a big angle that's actually three different angles that will involve a babyface turn, someone being kicked out of a group, and a new pay-per-view match being announced.
Yeah.
Because that's what happened here as well.
Mm-hmm.
In summation, the Don Callis family came out to do Boxing Day treats. I quite enjoyed that because this is an American TV show, they had to go to great lengths to explain what Boxing Day is.
Yeah. Or Boxing Week. As
Boxing
they kept
Week.
Calling it.
Because it's not actually on Boxing Day. It was on the 27th.
Yeah.
So they couldn't. It's not actually Boxing Day because that's the 26th. But us here as Brits were like, yeah, Boxing Day.
Boxing Day. Yeah.
Yeah.
But also,
it's a bank holiday.
You don't really give gifts on Boxing Day. That's okay.
No.
Fine.
What you do on Boxing Day is you just have Christmas dinner again because it's all the leftovers mm-hmm. from Christmas. You watch the Christmas movies that you didn't get to watch on mm-hmm. Christmas Day or in the lead up to Christmas, or you see other members of your family that you didn't see on Christmas Day.
Play with all the new toys that you got.
Play with all the new toys, right? Exactly that.
Yeah.
So it's not quite what they were doing here.
It's fine.
But it's fine. So what happened was the Don Callis family
said it's a Christmas present. It's fine. Whatever. Doesn't matter.
He was doing it for Heat because it's a Canadian.
Because Canada.
Because it's a Canadian thing. He was like, in Canada, we do this thing to be like, boo.
Boo.
Yes.
Yeah.
In Canada, we give gifts. Look at us. What assholes we are. So he gives them gifts. He gives them, and they're all paintings.
Yes.
Imagine Mel Coleman ones. Gives them all mm-hmm. paintings.
They are,
and,
yes.
Yeah, and it's like, the, you know, the funny one was Carl Fletcher and Don Callis beating up kangaroos.
That's good.
Thought it was funny. It's also good because he doesn't have tattoos in that one, but he does have tattoos in the other ones. And Taz just goes, oh, he lost the tattoos in that one. And then Sammy Guevara makes his return.
Oh.
And Sammy Guevara comes out. if you don't recall, he was part of the Don Callis family prior to getting concussed. So he came back. He cuts a promo about how... he is like, we've got Powerhouse Hobbs. He beat Chris Jericho. We've got Big Take. And he beat Carl Fletcher. It was almost like he'd forgot what his name was. He's like, we've got Big Take. And he beat Kenny Omega twice in one week. And then he moved on. And Carl Fletcher went, what about me?
A current champion, no
less. He's the Ring of Honor TV champion. Yeah. Just won it like last week or so. And the camera literally pans around as Carl Fletcher goes, what about me? So it was really good.
Wild.
So anyway, he's talking to Don and he's like, Don, you didn't call me when I had a concussion. Mm-hmm. And Don's like, you know, well, I got you a present. And they reveal the present and it's the Don Callis family surrounding Sammy Guevara with his newborn. And Sammy's like, just who in the hell gave you permission to put my baby in a painting? And Don's like, I mean, I got you a present. It's nice, right? Look, you're surrounded by your family. That's a good thing. Because you're not mentally capable of being a parent.
Yeah. It's a bit tenuous. But, you know, fine.
Yeah, tenuous though it was. So then the rest of Don Callis' family beat up Sammy Guevara as part of his babyface turn, kicking him out of the group. Chris Jericho runs down to make the save. They hug, reunite the sex god, completing the babyface turn for Sammy Guevara.
Yep.
Then Big Bill and Ricky Starks ran out through the crowd to attack Chris Jericho and Sammy Guevara. Then the lights went out, and then Sting and Darby Allin were in the ring to clear house and make the save, and now we have an 8-man tag at the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
As a lot happened in this short space time. It was a long segment.
Yes.
Helped by the fact that this hot Orlando crowd gave them everything they needed.
They did pop for pretty much everything in the segment.
That's it. They gave Callis the right amount of heat. They gave all of the baddies heat. They gave Starks and Big Bill heat. They popped big for Jericho coming out. They popped big for Sammy's return. They popped big for Sting and Darby making the save. So the crowd helped this a lot, I think. But good gravy. This was four segments combined into one.
I feel like there must have been an easier way. I don't know.
Oh, Pete, this is where you're wrong.
I don't know
I think
there
this was pretty self-explanatory right here.
I don't know what that way is. I just feel like there has to have been an easier way to get to something like Guevara and Jericho versus Starks and Big Bill. You have Jericho, doesn't have a partner anymore, and he's a bit down and he's like, oh, well, you know, I don't have a partner anymore. I guess that means I don't get a tag title shot. Starks and Big Bill can be like, hey, you don't get a tag title shot. You don't have a partner, blah, blah, blah. Maybe the Callis family walk by at that point and being like, yeah, you don't have any friends. This is what happens when you betray the Don Callis family, blah, 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 whatever. And Sammy Guevara comes back and Callis family like, hey, Sammy, you're here. And then he's like, no, actually, I'm here to be with Jericho, whatever. It's tenuous. It's bad. It's rushed. I get it. But sometimes you need to do that when you have last minute changes like that. I just feel like this was a bit much, you know?
This felt like it was sort of booked backwards.
Yes.
It was like, okay, well, we want to get to this 8-man tag. What do we need to do there? Okay, well, Sting and Darby Allin need to make the save for Chris and Sammy. All right, okay, well, how do we get to that? Well, Ricky Starks and Big Bill attack them and Sting and Darby Allin. Okay, well, how do we get to that? Well, the Don Callis, Sammy turns on the Don Callis. Okay, well, how do we get to that? Well, Chris Jericho runs down and he's like, okay, well, how do we get to that?
Yes.
And because I think in your world where it's just like, it's Sammy and Jericho, and that's the partnership. The question would have been, wasn't he part of the Don Callis family?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's why I think you do need to have a Don Callis family interaction here somewhere, which I get. But it was the fact that you also inserted Ding and Starby. Sting and Darby into this.
Well, there's Sting's final match. It's mirror versions of themselves.
Sting and Starby.
Yes. Okay, here's what you do. It's someone who was as tall as Sting, but is in, like, Darby getup, and someone who was as small as Darby, but they're in Sting getup. That's Sting and Starby.
That's it. That's it. That's the match right there.
Honestly, AEW, pick up the phone. I'm full of ideas like this.
We've got such great ideas. Anyway, I just feel like there should have been something better. This wasn't very good, very drawn out, and it was very, all of the tension was very, felt very manufactured, you know? Like, there was a lot of stuff that could have probably just been smoothed over if people just spoke like normal humans. But
yeah,
it just felt like it was a very manufactured of Sammy Guevara being like, you put my baby in a painting. It's like, yes, that's very thoughtful. Why are you mad about that, Sammy? And then it was Don being like, yeah, well, you're not a good dad. And it's like, why would you say, what?
Yeah,
it was just a bit like, why is anyone saying this?
I think this was slightly all over the show.
Yes, it was.
This was like we've kicked over four cans of paint, and then we're trying to clear up the mess, we're actually creating a picture here. I think it's an 8-man tag.
Yeah.
But I do think, if it were me, I don't think we needed to have Jericho and Starks and Big Bill like as part of this. Like, if we're saying that match is off at World's End, maybe we don't need them on World's End. We can just do Sammy versus Takeshita at the pay-per-view,
or yeah.
Sammy versus Carl Fletcher at the pay-per-view. And that's Sammy going up against the Don Callis family. Because do you know what I don't need to see? Chris Jericho fight the Don Callis family again.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to see him beat the Don Callis family again.
Which he will.
Because I think, you know, we'll have our predictions tomorrow, but spoilers, I think that the baby faces are going to win, so I don't need to see Jericho beating them again.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, when Jericho ran out to make the save, I'm like, yeah, I guess, but I'm so tired of seeing Jericho feuding with the Don Callis. We were done with this. We moved past it. And now it's just, now we're kind of doing it again. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's circumstances and happenstances, but we didn't need to do it this way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So that's my, like, my other thing I'd add on.
One more thing. The bit that really came to me as well was, like, why were Sting and Darby there? Why did they make the save? Other than, like, well, baby faces.
Because we need to get to an 8-man
tag. Yeah. That's the reason. But in storyline. Because the thing is, they've fought Jericho and Sammy and Sting Darby.
Forbidden Door, yeah.
Jericho and Sting have been in two matches together. Forbidden Door this year and the Dynamite after Forbidden Door, where it was Darby and Sting versus Jericho and Guevara. And at Forbidden Door, it was Darby and Sting and Naito versus Jericho, Guevara, and Suzuki. Why are they helping him? They don't like them.
Oh, bats.
Yeah, they have a bat in common. Like, yeah. I
don't mean the animal. I mean the baseball variety.
Yes. But it just feels like I said, it just felt very manufactured. All of it was like so much tension between people that shouldn't have been there. The babyfaces came out to save people they shouldn't have been saving. It was all just like, 8-man tag.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a victim of circumstance.
Absolutely.
Because Kenny fell ill. But yeah, this is not like, it's not a great make-do.
No, exactly.
Because I guess, like, would the pay-per-view have just had Sting and Darby against the Don Callis family?
Have Sting and Darby against Big Bill and Ricky Starks. Like,
I thought once they did the save, it was like, oh, we're going to do like a triple threat tag match.
Mm, yeah.
And then they were like, oh, it's a 8-man. I was like, all right, okay, yeah, I guess that also works.
Yeah.
And then the final of our talking segments, technically is the penultimate because we also had Excalibur run down the World's End card. The final talking segment was backstage, Roderick Strong had an It's Always Sunny style board where he was like, Max is the devil.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we needed this. It's just keeping that plate spinning.
I don't think we needed it. Roddy's very funny though.
Yeah. So then I was like, all right, I am done with the talking now. That has been half an hour.
There was also a tease of a sit-down interview with Christian Cage and Adam Copeland, which happened later.
So yeah, I was like, I'm done with the talking now. I could really do with some wrestling. I was like, hey, Bryan Danielson's here! And he comes out with his arms in the air, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to hug him. Because I'm so excited for a big old wrestling now, because it's Danielson versus Eddie Kingston in the finals of semi-finals of the Blue League.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the semi-finals of the C2, the finals of the Blue League.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that triple threat, I was like, match of the tournament.
Yeah.
Like, that's been the best thing in the tournament so far. At a tournament that's had a lot of like great matches in it, that's the best thing in the tournament. And then this happened.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a perfect underdog story match. Because what I loved about the triple threat was, that was like crowd brawling.
Mm.
Like the opening part of it was just them all brawling around because it's no DQs because it's a triple threat. And it's Jay White using a chair in the sand. Yeah, and so they're brawling and Jay White can't really get into the match because it's Moxley and it's Swerve Strickland and their sort of deathmatch hangman history that they've got brawling in the crowd. So Jay White finally gets them into the ring and he's like, I'm now going to do the wrestling side of things. So it's a chop block to Moxley's knee. Take him out, beat up Swerve a little bit, go back to Moxley, take out the knee again. So it had sort of like various different varieties in there. This was just straight up wrestling match and it was the underdog versus the best wrestler on the planet who's not named Will Ospreay or by our listings also Gunther or MJF. And it's the underdog story of that. And it's the fighting spirit of Eddie Kingston never being able to beat Bryan Danielson. But he's beaten Claudio. If he can beat Danielson, that's two. If he beats Danielson, that's Moxley. And that could be a third one. And he's then beaten all of the members of the Blackpool Combat Club. That's pretty juicy. That's pretty spicy. And it was these two just beating the snot out of each other. Holy heckins, the chops in this match. Crivens. It was like, I was awesome.
Yeah. I think for me, like, this match was great in and of itself. So great back and forth. Great underdog story for Kingston. But the bit that sold it for me, I was already having a great time. But the bit that sold it for me was when Danielson hit the knee and Kingston kicked out. And everyone went, oh, my God, Kingston kicked out. And there was just a bit where he's on the floor and the referee's checking on him. And Kingston just throws up the middle finger towards Danielson. Oh, it's just perfect.
Because slightly before that, Danielson was mocking him for throwing up the middle finger during their Blue League match. He's like, oh, you're going to flip me off now? Where are you flipping me off? Like, King, what's going on, Eddie? You bum. Why aren't you flipping me off now? So then Kingston just flips him off. And it is this Danielson, the big smirk across his face. Oh, Danielson being this little like prick heel in this, like, which is what he sort of goes into when he's in this mode of like, no, I am better than you because I am the best wrestler on the planet. Yeah. I'm the best in the world at this. And he just gets this big, it's what happened in the MJF match, that big smirk on his face being like, oh, I can do this all day. And I'm really enjoying myself doing it. And he gives him the middle finger and he's like, great.
Yeah, perfect.
Because now I'm going to kick your head in.
Yeah.
And because it's Kingston as well, is like, I'm just going to kick you as hard as I can. Like, you don't mind, right? And he's like, oh no, because this is real. So of course you're going to kick me. Otherwise, how are you going to beat me?
Yeah, of course.
So you say, I'm going to hit you as hard as I can. I'm going to stomp you in the face as hard as I can. This running drop kick into the corner, like proper, like right in the mush. This match was so great. I loved Kingston's work in this. He made this big babyface fire comeback towards the end. Proper powering up. The straps are coming down and everything. And it's Eddie laid bare. Oh my God. It was so emotional. It was so beautiful. It was so poetic.
Yeah.
I loved it.
The last like 2 minutes of this match is perfect wrestling. It is that, like you said, it's that emotion of him getting the firing up and the straps coming down and the chops and back fist, powerbomb. And you go, oh my God, Eddie, yes. It is a perfect underdog finish. It is that powering up and the overcoming of that bigger obstacle. It was perfect. Kingston wins. Kingston's the guy. Kingston's the man.
Yeah. As I said to Tempest, when they first announced the tables, I was like, I feel like we're heading for a Moxley Kingston final in Long Island for the Triple Crown. And Tim was like, yeah, I mean, that does make sense. But hot dog, like I'd said that just the week prior to that, when they first announced this, I was like, this feels like it's Danielson's tournament.
Yeah.
Because it feels like this is, you know, Tony's gift to Danielson because he's always wanted to work one of these styles of things. And me and Dan said in that Collision episode when they announced it, I was like, yeah, this feels like it's a Danielson thing. We had an Ultra Chat in last week saying the thing I hate about the C2 is that it's so predictable that Brian Danielson's winning it. And I said to that person, I was like, I don't think it's that predictable though, because I don't think Danielson's winning it now. But like, but they still managed to convince me that he could do.
Yeah.
Because you had Moxley winning the Gold League. So as you mentioned earlier, you've got two perfect options of who his tournament finals could be against. I thought this was so great.
Yeah.
And then Moxley comes out.
Oh.
No music.
Yeah.
Just walks down to the ring and he's got a microphone in his hand.
Ah.
And then you got the great Eddie Kingston. He's, you know, he's not been to promo class. So he's just like, you got something to say? Hey, you're talking to the microphone. And you can hear him like mouthing off. I love Kingston so much for this. And Moxley, you know, basically says, look, I've only wanted one thing out of you. Like when you have, I've put my reputation on the line to defend you. I've only ever asked one thing of you, 100%. Bring 100%.
Yeah.
So I'm asking you again to bring 100% because you're going to need it. And I already know, because I know you better than anyone else, that you already know you can't beat me. So really, I've already run. I've already won. He's like, because everyone, a lot of people like you. A lot of people here like you. A lot of people around the world like you. They're certainly going to like you at World's End. But you don't like you. And I'm going to be able to take advantage of that because I know you better than you know yourself.
Yeah.
And I know that you know you can't beat me, so I'm going to beat you quite easily.
Yeah.
And Kingston just fires back in only the way that Eddie Kingston can. And it was so, so great. Begging him to bring that fighting spirit. You bring your 100% because I'm going to really enjoy slapping it out of you.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it's so good.
It's so perfect. And for me, like the line that really
told me where they're going with this and what they want to achieve with this tournament and with this final is Moxie saying, you want to be a triple crown champion like your childhood heroes? You're going to need to earn every inch of that. And I'm like, oh, Kingston's going to, and it's going to make me cry. Okay, cool, I get it. Right. And for me, Moxley's the final boss of Eddie Kingston's story.
Yeah.
The C2 is Eddie Kingston's story, and Moxley's the final boss.
That's so good.
And it is perfect. Yeah. Eddie has to win at World's End. I'll be annoyed if Kingston doesn't win now.
I will write an angry letter.
Yes.
And I might not send it.
Yeah.
I'll have got it out of my system.
Yeah.
And that's almost enough. Mm. I loved all of this. I thought all of the C2 stuff on this show was perfect. Mm-hmm. I really do think, credit to AEW on this one, I think they've done really good with their inaugural tournament.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait for next year.
Yeah, man. I love it.
Can't wait for next year. It's really, really great. We were supposed to get a sit-down interview with Christian Cage and Adam Copeland. However, Adam Copeland was late to show up for it, and then he just brawled with Christian instead, and they did a lot of grunting in the hallway while they brawled, got separated, and that's that.
I don't know whether it's some sort of, like, audio processing issue I have with my ears or my brain or whatever, but for me, whenever you get all of the voices of, like, the locker room piling out to break up the fight, and everyone's going, whoa, 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 stop, 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 and they're pulling them apart and all that stuff. That noise is so jarring in my head. Mm. I can't deal with it. I was like, I have to skip this. I have fast forward. I can't.
I mean, for me, it's more like the... You son of a bitch. Son of a bitch.
That just reminds me of Pandemic Wrestling.
That's bad. Like, that is... Yeah. When I was watching, I was having flashbacks to him and Randy.
Yeah,
like,
right,
WrestleMania,
yeah.
Just wandering around the PC for 40 minutes, being like, God. What plaything do you want to do this? I don't know, the weight machine's there. Son of a bitch. Weight machine. Son of a bitch. Like, and it's basically what we had here. And it's all right. Like,
yeah. Oh God, they brawled.
They brawled.
The end.
And then surprisingly, we had another match. I really thought with 20 minutes left of the show, well, there won't be any more matches here. But lo and behold, we had Chris Statlander versus Sky Blue. I didn't go in this with a lot of expectations because neither of these two women have got a match at the pay per view.
Mm-hmm.
They're sort of in periphery of stories, but this felt like a token women's match, for lack of a better word about it. But man, I thought they really pulled it out of the bag.
They really did.
A really good little 10-minute match here.
Isn't it weird that when you give women time to have a match, they have a really good match?
Really good match.
Isn't that weird?
Like, Statlander was great. Like, Sky Blue was really good. Sky Blue is one of those people as well that Alexa Bliss and Rhea Ripley and Julia Hart, actually, to this degree, of like, if you just let them be themselves, like, this is the sort of thing that they're into, then they just become better.
Yeah, they're just great.
Because like Rhea Ripley was like, when she first came into WWE, was like, hi, I'm Rhea Ripley, and like, it'd be really nice to meet your dad. And then and now she's just like, I am your dad. It's like, I think that's, you just let her be her. And she like has flourished through that. Same with Alexa Bliss, same with Julia Hart. And I think the same thing here with Sky Blue, because Sky Blue's now, she's way more gothy and stuff. She's got new goth entrance music and stuff. Yeah. And people are like, I think she feels more comfortable in her role. And then, they're really, really good. And because of interference from Julia Hart, we had an Avalanche Sky Code Blue for the win.
Which was also great.
Really, really good.
Love that.
Really, really good match. I very much enjoyed it. And it kind of served several different stories, which I appreciate as well, because Stokely Hathaway was on commentary. So you had Stokely furthering his storyline with Chris Statlander and Willow Nightingale. You were furthering the friendship relationship between Sky Blue and Julia Hart, while at the same time doing the teasers of Hart versus Abaddon, because that's what's happening at the pay-per-view.
Yep.
So serving like quite a lot of different things and almost like fleshing out this TBS field from just being Julia versus Monster of the Week in Abaddon to multiple challenges there could be.
Absolutely, yeah. Also, there was a Chaos Theory German suplex in this match, which means it's a 5-star match.
Yeah, and I enjoyed this.
It's great.
Really, really enjoyed this. And Stokely was very funny on commentary. He had a moment where, like, I think it was Tony Schiavone said, because like Stokely was saying something and Taz was praising him for it. And Tony's like, why do you always suck up to people when they come out of commentary? And Taz got really like, it was like, I don't do that. Like, I don't even like that guy. We're not friends. Like, I just, like, they made a good point. I get hazed here by Tony Schiavone. And Stokely was like, oh, we're not friends? Like, I bought you a Starbucks gift card. No one else gave you $5. That was another great bit of like commentary excuse me, this is during the ad break that we got on the fight feed during the Kingston Danielson match, where Taz clearly thought he had a good point to make, but made it very, very poorly.
Yeah.
Which is when he's like, hey, you know, this Danielson guy, he's a vegan, right? You know, like he cares about the earth and like wood and stuff. Like, you know, he cares about all these things. You know, you just don't expect it from this kind of guy. And they're like, what? They're like, oh, you know, he likes plants and stuff. Like, you know, likes to eat, like, he doesn't eat meat and that. And they're like, what do you mean? He's like, I don't know why he's being so mean to Eddie Kingston and calling him a bum. Like, you just don't expect it. You expect it from people like me, but like, you don't expect it from people like Brian. You're like, he eats plants.
Yeah.
And next time I was like, yeah, I guess.
I mean, I guess you're right.
I guess you're right.
Like, yeah.
When are we back on live?
Yeah.
We've talked about the main event. So the last thing to talk about is our final backstage segment of this show, which was Ruby Soho and Saraya. And Renee Paquette says, oh, Ruby, you've got a match on Rampage this week with Marina Shafir. Thoughts? And Ruby didn't really have a lot to say because she was interrupted early doors by Saraya. And Saraya is almost trying to still be Ruby's friend, even though Ruby feels to think that their friendship is kind of like, it's falling away because Tony Storm's gone now. And then she gets a call from Angelo Parker. So she's like, I've got to... And Saraya's like, oh, hey, yeah, you know, tell a guy I really like him. Also, I've got a new friend here.
Yeah.
Harley Cameron walks in because QT Marshall's gone now. So we don't have QTV anymore. So I don't know what Aaron Solo's going to do. And so Harley Cameron walks
in. Or Johnny TV, for that matter.
Oh, yeah, he was part of that group. Oh, he's on Ring of Honor now. Johnny Honor.
Yeah.
And
John Honor.
Johnny Ring.
Johnny Ring.
So Harley Cameron's standing there, and she's a bit like, ooh, a bit sort of like, you know, big massive eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
And Renee's like, oh, hey, so, you know, what's this friendship you've got here? What's all this about? And Saraya's like, oh, Harley, why didn't you show them, sweetie? Why do we like each other? And Harley Cameron pulls out a knife. And Saraya's like, oh, no, not that bit. Not that bit, sweetie. No, we'll talk about it next week, Renee. We're like, we've got to go now. And I was like, what? And pulled out a knife.
What? She pulled out a knife and was like, not that. Like, well, what was she supposed to pull out then?
Which means you knew that was there.
Yeah, you're okay with the knife being there.
What? So Harley Cameron's new gimmick is, I like knives, I guess.
Yep.
Was she going to stab someone? Is like that her new thing? Is it's like...
It's Chekhov's knife. Now you've got to use it.
This is... Like with Abyss with the nail-covered board and stuff they had, Janice.
Drew McIntyre's sword.
Yeah,
you've got to use it.
Well, you've got to use it now. You keep threatening to chop someone's head off with it, so eventually someone's head's got to lob off.
Yeah.
And here's Harley Cameron being like, oh, yeah, I'm a big fan of Scream. Like, I'm going to go stab someone, I guess. Billy Loomis is my hero. I'm going to go stab. I'm going to be Stu. Not Grayson. I'm just going to start stabbing people.
Yeah.
Weird.
She just comes out. She's like, got a really knife idea, guys. like, what? What is this segment?
It's the weird world that AEW currently is.
Yeah.
This is on the same show with Danielson and Kingston. Like
the most real thing that you can imagine.
And like that triple threat, the C2 and everything. It's like wrestling show. Yeah. QT Marshall, they'll be like, oh, I've got to leave, guys, because you're being too much of a wrestling company. And I think you should be more of a sports entertainment company. On the same show where you've got Action Andretti squashing a bottle into his mouth.
That's a 10 out of 10 segment.
And Harley Cameron brandishes a knife. And Saraya's like, not that one, sweetie. We've got to know the other thing. What's the other thing? An axe?
Which we'll talk about next week. Why can't you talk about it now?
Hook and tease. Come back next week with Dynamite. Find out more about this knife situation we find ourselves in.
Oh,
awesome.
God.
10 out of 10 segment.
Jesus. What a show.
Can't wait for next week.
Yeah.
The two things I'm so into. World's End, I've got all my excitement about that. Dynamite next week. I want to find out what's up with Action Andretti. I want another bottle segment.
Yep.
I want to see if he can do it with Pepsi. And then I want to see what's up with Harley Cameron.
Yeah.
I know her name now.
Yeah.
Previously, I'd be like, what's her face from QTV? I know her name now.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so in.
The knife lady. That's her, yeah.
The very knife lady. that was the show. I gave it 3 out of 5.
Yeah, it checks out.
Yeah.
Because I thought the wrestling was impeccable.
Yeah.
And the other segments were, you know, not.
Passable.
Yeah.
To a degree.
Yeah.
And some of them weren't.
Passable if you squint a bit.
You look at them with an askance angle. Like, yeah. Oh, yeah. Actually, it was passable, I suppose. Yeah. But yeah, 3 out of 5 show.
Yeah.
I had a good time with it. But like it's all the CS2 stuff that I very much enjoyed.
Oh, yeah.
But that's it for this episode. We are back tomorrow with our World End predictions, myself and Pete. And then on Saturday, it's our 2024 predictions, our Wild and Wacky predictions. That'd be myself and Oliver Davis. No SmackDown review this week. And then on Sunday, it's going to be the World End coverage with Oliver Davis and Dan Layton. And then we're not doing anything for New Year's Day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is New Year's.
No,
that's New Year's Eve. Yeah. We're not doing anything for New Year's Day, but then the Raw show will be back next week.
On the 2nd.
Yes.
Yes.
So lots to check out and lots to tune in for. Please do press the subscribe button if it's your first time here and you haven't already. Give us a little thumbs up as well. And leave a comment down below with what you think of this episode. Till then, I've been Lee Cohen, D-A-D. That has been Chopper Pete Quinnell, or just Pete Quinnell. Bye. Jam that jam.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.